Henny, also from the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants. So if the three of you would each introduce yourself and then as you make your presentation, introduce yourself for the record again. So welcome.
Thank you. So I'm John Hawkins. I don't know if you just want a simple...
Just simple.
Okay. Heather?
I'm Heather Jackson.
I'm Doug Henny.
Okay. So I'm going to lead the introduction to this section. Good afternoon, Chair Senator Burdick and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Hawkins. I'm a member of the Oregon Society of CPAs Taxation Committee, and I'm a certified public accountant with the firm of Grove, Mueller & Swank in Salem, Oregon, just a few blocks from the Capitol. I appreciate the opportunity to participate in today's hearing. And on behalf of about 4,100 members of the Oregon Society of CPAs, we respectfully testify related to the Reconnect and Oregon legislative analysis that we have prepared. Thank you for having us again. This has been a tradition for a number of years, and we appreciate having the opportunity to come meet with you. The materials that we have prepared present federal tax law changes that have been enacted since the Oregon legislature adjourned and from the 2019 session. As a reminder, our primary, and you could go to the next slide, please. And one more. So as a reminder, our primary objective is to be a technical resource for the legislature. Secondarily, we wish to promote taxpayer compliance and efficient tax administration by striving to keep Oregon's tax law tied to the Federal Internal Revenue Code. Oregon has a permanent or rolling reconnection to federal law only as it applies to the definition of federal taxable income. Oregon has had the rolling reconnect to federal taxable income since January 1 of 2011. We support the rolling reconnect, whether the tax implications to taxpayers is either positive or negative. One significant exception to this connection that has developed is the federal deduction related to pass-through income under Internal Revenue Code Section 199A, which is the qualified business income deduction. Previously, that was the domestic production activities deduction or DPAD deduction. Oregon has disconnected from that and has their own provision that is a special tax rate that applies to certain qualifying pass-through entities and achieves a somewhat similar result, although it may impact different taxpayers. One exception does not have a large impact to taxpayer compliance, but our concern is that many exemptions or exceptions are several different connection dates could have an impact on taxpayer compliance and subsequently the cost of tax administration to the state of Oregon in issuing notices and performing audits. In addition to the substantive law, there are also some procedural differences that exist between federal and Oregon that have to do with the timing and manner of tax filings. Now, our committee has attempted to break down the federal tax law changes into recommendations very similar to prior years. And if you want, you could go to the next slide.
Before you do, Senator Finley, did you have a question?
You're muted. Sorry. No.
I didn't realize my hand was up.
Please proceed. I think we should just wait until Mr. Hawkins is finished, if we can, unless there's an urgent question. Thank you.
All right. So this presentation is slightly different than prior years. Oregon has not passed a fixed year conformity in 2 years. Thus, our written materials will cover federal legislation for both 2019 and 2020. However, we will focus our oral comments on the 2020 federal changes in our recommendations. We have about 80 pages of materials. Therefore, we may cover some items rather quickly that we feel are less important or less critical to bring to your attention. However, as we are going through our recommendations, please do not hesitate to stop us or ask questions on items that we're talking about or items that we might skip. So looking at these recommendations, key, the first category are those items that would be part of the rolling reconnect, that these are tax law changes that have changed the definition of federal taxable income, and therefore no modification would be required for Oregon to tie to the federal change. Recommendation B is a little different this year. These are things that would need the fixed date conformity in order to adopt, and there's just a very few items here. Recommendation C is where there's no Oregon change necessary. And these are gonna be primarily credits, penalties, administrative rules, procedural items that Oregon typically has its own rules. So those types of credits and similar items we've got listed for you, but Oregon does not need to do anything. There's no Oregon change needed. And in section D are things that reference the tax code, but really do not impact tax law. So we have a few items there. Then in sections E and F are what is commonly referred to as the extenders. There are a number of provisions that have not been made a permanent part of the tax code and frequently get extended 1 or 2 or 3 years every so often. And so we have kind of compiled a list for you of items that have been extended, and we give you their expiration date. Some things were extended 1 year, some things 2 years, et cetera. So there's just a list here that goes on for a couple of pages. And then there were some things that are in this extenders package that were allowed to expire. And those are in recommendation F. And that's just it's a fairly short list, but these are items that at the federal level have expired and the federal Congress has not extended, okay? So if you go to the next slide, the legislation we're including, there are 6 major tax bills that have passed since the legislative session expired and adjourned in 2019. There was the Further Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2020 that passed in December 20th of 2019. It contained 2 tax bills, the Secure Act, which mainly has to do with a lot of retirement plan provisions, IRA provisions, mandatory distributions, things of that nature. And then there was also the Taxpayer Certainty and Disaster Act of 2019. Now, we're going to refer to these two as the Secure Act and the Disaster Act of 2019. We testified on these things, on these two bills last year. They're in our materials, but we're probably going to skip them unless you have questions, okay? So then in March 18th of 2020, the Families First Coronavirus Response Act was passed. And we will refer to that as the FFCRA, or sometimes Families First Act. And what we've done is we've gotten a little fancy. We've highlighted sections according to which act they come from. So provisions that relate to this bill will be highlighted in orange. Then there was the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, or CARES Act, that was passed March the 27th of 2020. Those sections are highlighted in green. Then at the last days of December of 2020, there was another Consolidated Appropriations Act that also contained 2 tax bills. And one was the COVID-related Tax Relief Act of 2020. And we'll refer to that as the CTRA of 2020, and it's going to be highlighted in yellow. And then there was another Taxpayer Certainty Disaster Relief Act of 2020. So this is the Disaster Act of 2020. Both of the disaster acts tended to be mostly the extenders items that we will discuss in sections E and F. So, but as I say, we will cover all six of these bills in our materials. The items having to do with the Secure Act and the Disaster Act of 2019 will be in white. I didn't mention that before. And for the most part, we will skip those or cover them rather briefly. Any questions so far? So if you go to the next section, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Heather, to lead you through recommendations A.
Good afternoon, Chair Senator Burdick, Vice Chair Senator Boquist, and members of the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue. For the record, my name is Heather Jackson, and I'm a member of the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants Taxation Committee. I am a certified public accountant in practice in Portland, Oregon, and I appreciate the opportunity to be in the hearing today. We're going to start in page 8, so next page of the recommendations. Again, recommendations A, as this summary says, is this is the rolling reconnect, things that Oregon is automatically connected to without any changes at this point. So next slide. The first one here, we split into two categories. This is the carryback and the NOL provisions. We broke it up into two sections. One's for individuals, which we automatically reconnect for. And then in section B, which we'll talk about later, is the business NOL, because we don't automatically reconnect to that one. So that's the first page here on page 8. If you can go to page 9, this is the business interest limitations. This one is just increasing the limit to the business interest for businesses effective 19 and 20. Next slide. The government provided relief funds is basically, and all the wording here just says that PPP loans are not taxable income. So next slide. Limitation on business losses. This one is removes the excess limitation on the losses for 18, 19, and 20. It's the top one on the page. So this kind of goes back in time and caused a lot of people to file amended tax returns and other things. The next one is qualified improvement property. This is the 15-year qualified improvement property that had a 15-year life, which also then allowed it now to have 100% bonus depreciation. This is amending it so that property placed in service after December 31st, 2017 does get this benefit. This is a kind of fix to the prior legislation. If you have any questions any time, please let me know. I'm going to go through these as quick as possible and the highlights, just because there's so much to go over.
Heather, if I could just ask you to clarify on the previous page when you talked about the PPP loans that are forgiven, that they don't count as income. In this iteration of the CARES Act, that they didn't mention the deductibility of expenses issue. Is that correct?
That is correct. That's coming up in another act.
Okay, thank you. But it doesn't mention them either way, right?
It does. We do have one later, and I'll go over that one where they do allow deductibility of the expenses that are used for forgiveness.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions? Okay. Next page. Okay, the blue. See, and you can tell we moved on to the Disaster Act of 2020. We're now in the blue color. This is just date changes to the cafeteria plan that basically changes the dates that were in 2020 and, you know, when you had to use it by and changes. So those are just date changes for the most part. Next slide. The inclusion of over-the-counter medication for qualified medical expenses, this just added certain types of products to the account-based plans for 2020, they started. Then exemption for telehealth is in here. It's just talking about safe harbor and plans and that telehealth counts as a medical service beginning January 1 of 2020, trying to kind of make COVID, seeing a doctor during COVID at a medical expense. The qualified disaster relief payments, these are they're not considered income if they're reasonable and necessary to pay things. Next slide. Charitable contributions. So this one, and there will be another one a bit later, charitable contributions for standard deduction. If you take the standard deduction, you'd normally get your charitable contributions for the IRS. And so they basically said, if you're claiming standard deduction, you get a $300 tax deduction if you pay cash for charity. So if you gave $300, you get above the line deduction for the $300 in addition to your standard deduction starting January 1 of 2020. And we'll go over the other one in a few more slides for the 2021 rule. Next slide. This is the CTRA Act of 2020. We're just going to kind of highlight some of these on this page. The teacher expense deduction, the $250 that people have normally heard about, that has been added back. Deductions for the PPP, this is the part where it says if you have forgiveness, the deductions are deductible. So that's this one that you were just mentioning. Then they go on to some emergency grants and financial assistance and give some specific opportunities there. Next slide. The next, let's see, what does it say here? Pages 16 through 28 cover retirement plan changes. So we're just going to walk through these ones fairly quickly. A lot of them are date changes. Or plan modifications. So these are all regards to retirement plans. Let's see here. The next one. There is on page 19, so three slides. Thank you. The tax favor withdrawals from retirement plans, if it's COVID related, they're not charging the 10% excise penalty on early distributions, is one of the rules here. There's also, if you take distributions that don't exceed 100,000, you can either take the taxes over 3 years, you can pay it back over 3 years. They've given some leniency rules on withdrawals from retirement plans. Page 23 of the slide deck. Sorry, some of these are very long, so we're skipping a bit. They are allowing loans from retirement plans. You used to be capped at 50,000 was the max you could take out of a retirement loan. And now it's 100,000. So they just made the dollar amount change there. Page 26 of the packet. Perfect. They have put in here some more cancellation of debt for and deferred compensation plans is this middle section here. And they've just given more what's eligible, what's not. So just some definitions there. They have in the bottom here, they have waived the IRA minimum required distribution for 2020. So the RMDs for 2020 were not required. And people were allowed to put the money back if they had already taken it. And that goes on for pages. On page 29, any questions about the retirements? I tried to hit the highlights of retirement ideas. Yes, Senator Finley?
Senator Finley, you have a question? You're on
mute. Yes, I do, Madam Chair. I'm sorry. I can't read the slide. Is it? I have no resolution on this slide. Everything else looks good. Is it my connection, or is it? Does everybody else have the same issue I have?
No, I can read mine. It's small, but I can read it.
Okay. No, I'll go to Olis then because I can't. This is absolutely unlegible for me. And I started out doing well, but I've lost. The last three slides is not legible for me. I'll go to Olis and go follow it there.
Okay, sorry about that. Other members?
No, that's no worries. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. We'll continue on page 29. This is the Disaster Act of 2020. We're back to blue. This first one is the medical expense deduction floor. This is the 7.5%, then it's 10%, went back to 7.5%, and this is at 7.5%, and it's a permanent change to the medical expense deduction. There's some information on the firefighters, the volunteer firefighters and emergency medical responders. We cover that one each year. You'll see it's here in blue at the bottom of the page, and then it's white on the next page, on the next slide. So they just effectively moved it forward yet another year. So next slide. In the middle of the slide is the transition from tuition deduction to increasing the lifetime the income limit on lifetime learning credit. So basically the tuition and related expenses deduction is gone, and they've just increased the income limits on the lifetime learning credit. This takes effect after 12/31/2020, so starting in 2021. The next couple are capitalization purposes on beer and wine and distilled spirits. So we'll skip that one. Next slide. The cancellation of qualified principal resident indebtedness. They basically moved the provision through 2025, it was set to expire December 31st, 2020. Now it's December 31st, 2025. They have also lowered the maximum amount of discharge to $750 from the prior amount. The next one is the 7-year recovery for motorsports. This seems to get in here every year. It goes year by year, and now it's through December 31st, 2025. So the motorsport one got extended to 2025. The film and television and live theater productions expensing also got moved to December 31st, 2025. It was previously set to expire December 31st, 2020. The empowerment zones also got extended an additional 5 years, so December 31st, 2025. It was expiring at December 31st, 2020. A newer one for this year is the exclusion for employer payments of student loans. So an employer can pay employee student loans, and it's a tax-free benefit. That was for just 2020, but it's been extended through December 31st, 2025. So many of the ones on this page are all just extending them an additional 5 years. The mortgage insurance premiums was set to expire December 31st, 2020, and it got extended 1 year only. That's the one at the bottom of the page. Next slide. The depreciation of racehorses, that one got extended 1 year to December 31st, 2021. The business property on Indian reservations, that got extended also 1 year. Slide 33. Already at the top, they're just giving minimum age for distributions for working retirement distributions. They just kind of changed the age for in-service distributions to age 55. Let's see here. The third one down, deduction for business meals. It is making business meals 100% deductible starting in 2021 and through 2022. So the 50% limitation is no longer there for those 2 years. The charitable donation deduction, which we mentioned earlier, was for 2020 is $300 for a tax return. Starting in 2021, it's $300 for single and $600 for joint filers. For those people who are not itemizing. The disaster relief contributions made by corporations. If a corporation makes a qualified disaster relief contribution, they can deduct up to 100% of their taxable income of that donation, which is normally limited. Slide 34. So the personal casualty losses went away for the most part, except for in disaster areas. So this talks about the increase of the floor from $100 to $500 since there's disaster relief related personal casualty losses. The next one is the health and dependent care flexing spending account arrangements. This is just giving people more time to use the money. It changes some dates and things like that. Next slide. The last one, special disaster related rules on retirement funds. This one kind of went through and clarified some of the, or synced some of the other ones that were the retirement. Basically, the distributions aren't having the 10% additional early distribution penalty. You get $100,000 with having multiple ways of handling it, meaning 3 years to pay it back, 3 years to take the income over. You can do, if you took out money to buy a home, they have the 180-day rules to put it back. Oh, sorry, next slide, please. And that's at the top of the page. They talked about the loans of $100,000 up from $50,000. And next slide. And then the last part is just plan amendments. And then the last page 37 to 47. Are all Secure Act items that cover a variety of topics, but these were covered last year, so I wasn't gonna cover them the last basically 10 pages unless someone saw a need to cover some of those.
No, go ahead and proceed.
Okay, thank you. John, I'll turn it back over to you.
Okay. Okay, so, Chair Senator Burdick and members of the committee, I'm going to discuss recommendations B. And here, as Heather mentioned earlier, Oregon has a different, has already disconnected from federal for corporate NOLs. So all the special rules that were passed to allow a five-year carry back to make some other changes to, I'm sorry, I'm on slide 49. Apologize. There you go. Now you caught up with me. So all the rules that were passed to make changes to NOLs, carrybacks, to increase them to 5 years, to eliminate the 80% limitation, all those items do not apply to corporations because corporations aren't allowed to, under Oregon law, corporations can't carry them back. So the NOL changes that Heather talked about earlier only affect individuals, as under Oregon law, only individuals can carry back NOLs. So to adopt these provisions, Oregon would have to do some special legislation to conform to these rules. There is a rule that in the middle of, on page 50, next slide.
John, before you go there, sure. When you say that it only applies to individuals, does that include pass-through entities?
It would. Pass-through entities would pass their losses through to individuals if they have, you know, basis and the passive loss rules don't apply, et cetera. If they were able to deduct those losses and if they were to have a loss, then yes, they would be able to carry that loss back 5 years.
And we are connected to that piece?
And we are connected to that piece with the roll and reconnect.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. In the middle of, on the slide on page 50, NOLs and other attribute limitations, excuse me, there's a rule with C Corps, if there is a change in ownership, there's a limitation on the ability to carry forward those NOLs, and that rule's been relaxed slightly if the change in ownership was to facilitate a loan guarantee in some way. So to me, that seems to be a fairly narrow exception. This last item here that's on page 50, the slide on page 50 and 51, when I first read it, I had to scratch my head a little bit. This relates to forbearance on federally backed mortgage loans. And there are entities out there, REITs, which are real estate investment trust, and REMICs, which are real estate mortgage investment conduits is the right name. And these are investment devices that people can invest in frequently through a broker and essentially invest into a pool of mortgages. And there was a rule that said that if you entered into a forbearance agreement with one of those mortgages, it was a prohibited transaction and created some bad tax consequences. I throw this in here, this section, because it doesn't tie to the definition of taxable income, but Oregon also has its own provisions. There's ORS 314.260 that talks about prohibited transactions with REMICs, and it just, you know, or federal has provided a safe harbor where that it will not be a prohibited transaction if it meets certain guidelines. And I think this would be something that Oregon would have to somehow adopt a similar rule. This would not be part of the rolling reconnect. Again, I think this is a fairly obscure rule, but nonetheless, it's something that we thought should be in recommendation B. So that's our list of things that I think that are impacted by a fixed date conformity. Now I'm gonna give it back to Heather for recommendation C.
Okay. So for recommendation C, if we could go to page 53. Perfect. This one's going to be the colorful section. There's a lot more in this one that covers across the different tax acts. Basically, the first page, the top two are the credits for the paid sick and family leave, part of the Family First Act. The middle one is the corporation's minimum tax credits. They are accelerating those. The bottom one is to protect taxpayer information. There was the quick refunds that happened on page 54. The page 55 on the middle of the page is the recovery rebates, the economic impact payments. This is the one where people got the $1,200 per person or $600 per person in the most recent one, plus some money for the children. This one, the only impact that is to Oregon is this actual payment reduces if a taxpayer is claiming their federal taxes on their Oregon return, this actually reduces the federal tax subtraction, if that made sense. So it actually does impact Oregon just from being in here, but we didn't call it out because you automatically are, that's just the automatic treatment of it.
Okay, Heather, on this recommendation C stuff, could you kind of elaborate on, it says no change necessary to the ORS, but could you just elaborate on what our status is and what kind of actions we could consider taking on this category?
Most of this category are federal tax credits, federal penalties, administrative rules, which Oregon has its own rules to. So these are ones that are federally done that Oregon either has their own rule or their own credit or no credit or their own rules to penalties and administrative rules. So this section is actually just changes that the IRS has made that have no bearing on you guys needing to do something because you have your own section.
Okay, that's very helpful. So what you're saying is that the federal would not preempt what we do at the state?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
Alrighty, on the bottom of page 55, that one just talks about the $600 one, the most recent payment. The next one down on page 56 is the NOLs, again, the carryback relating to just the mechanics of it. It isn't actually the rule, it's the mechanics of the NOL. And IRSC section 965, you have the railroad track maintenance credit on page, next page on 57. You have some excise tax for the few of, and a new markets tax credit. So there's a couple of tax credits there. On page 58. Basically, all of these are credits and either got extended 1 year, most of them got extended 5 years, so they are extended through 2025. The next slide on page 59, if I'm going too fast, let me know. These are mostly federal things, so. On page 59, you have the health care tax credit, the HCTC. That's still there. It's a refundable credit. There's a few credits here that all got extended 1 year, the Indian Employment Credit, the Mine Credit, American Samoa Economic Development Credit, and Second Generation Biofuel Credit. on page 60, these are all credits and excise tax. Most of these credits on this page got extended 1 year, and for the most part. Page 61, okay. These two credits, low income housing tax credit, established a 4% minimum tax credit. It's for effective years beginning in 2021. The employee retention credit, which has gotten a lot of information on those last few days, this one is the credit for starting in 2020. Page 62, the earned income credit got a few changes to it for if you're somebody who's qualifying for earned income, in some situations you can use your 2019 earned income instead of your 2020 earned income to get the earned income credit. And then pages 62 through 66 are all the SECURE Act, which we had covered in the prior year. Okay, on to page 68. This section is recommendation D, which is all the provisions that mention the tax code but have no impact to the tax law. So these are, a lot of these are the excise tax, but a lot of these are just descriptions. It covers how things are done. Let's see here, excise tax. If you go to page 70 of the slides, starting in the middle, the rapid coverage for preventive services and vaccines for COVID, the coronavirus. These are part of the CARES Act, and these are all due to the COVID, you know, in getting the vaccines, how to report, all that stuff. That goes on for a couple of pages here for 70 and 71. And then on 72, we're back to the SECURE Act and the that were covered last year. So that brings us to recommendation E, and I will turn it back over to John.
Okay. Thank you. Madam Chair, Senator Burdick and the committee, I actually just realized I was supposed to cover section C. Heather jumped in there like a trooper and didn't miss a beat, so my mistake for doing that to her. So I noticed there was a slight hesitation there when I said that, so that was why. I wasn't looking at my notes. I'm going to get into recommendations E. Now, again, much of this has already been covered in some of the sections that Heather covered. What we've tried to do here is just give you kind of a table that you could reference and look at several of the tax provisions that have a limited duration. They have a set sunset. There's a for when they will expire. And I'm going to mention just the top couple of three. One of the provisions here is that for purposes of the 163J, which is the interest deduction for certain where we have this 30% and then it moved to a 50% limitation of adjusted taxable income for at least the year 20 and 21. We do not take the deduction for depreciation in calculating that adjusted taxable income.
I think you need to go back one slide.
Do I need to go back one slide?
There you go. This is what you're talking about, right? Oh, I'm sorry.
About right now. So these were most of these items are extenders. They were passed as part of the, and I went back one slide. Okay. But they, these all represent items that have been extended for some definite period of time, but they will sunset. Mm-hmm. And the second, the first one has to do with the interest deduction limitation and how we calculate the adjusted taxable income for that limitation. The second item, I wish that Gary was here because it has to do with GILTI, which is a foreign tax concept, and that's not my area of expertise. The third item here, I think Heather's already mentioned, I mean, it increases the amount that volunteer firefighters can get from $30 a month to $50 a month, and they don't have to pick that up as income. And that has been extended permanently. So I think what we've primary goal here was to provide for you in one place, you could see items that have a limited life. And just for kind of ease, if it references a code section that's lower than 60, it's a credit. And federal credits don't impact Oregon tax. So it just kind of, you know, references for research credit, code section 41, that is a federal credit, and it's not something that's going to impact Oregon. A few things, if you went, go to the next slide, you'll see almost all of these are code section 45, which is credits. So if you go one more slide, there are a few provisions in the center of the page there. 5-year cost recovery for machinery and equipment used in farming. That was made permanent for any equipment that was placed in service after 2017. Increase in charitable contribution deductions, that was extended out to 2025. What that does, I'm entering my 35th tax season here this year. And most of my career, you've been limited to 50% of your adjusted gross income for charitable contributions. It's been bumped up to 60% for a few years, and that will continue until 2025. The medical expense deduction being 7.5% for any expenses over 7.5% of your adjusted gross income, that was extended permanently. So that is a permanent change. We have the ability to deduct mortgage insurance premiums as qualified mortgage interest. Again, this has an income limitation on it. So for many lower income individuals who have to acquire mortgage insurance as part of getting a mortgage, they can deduct that mortgage insurance premium. And it just kind of goes on for several pages. I know that Senator Finley said that he loves this book and a hardback book. We will make sure you get one so that you have this for your reference. And the last section, which is on page 81, so if you want to skip forward a few slides, this is F. These are some things that were part of the extenders package, but Congress has decided to just let them expire. So these are provisions that have died. They no longer exist. And one of these I would point out is the second one to the top is qualified tuition and related expenses. And many of my clients, we claim the American Opportunities Tax Credit for tuition. on the federal return, but then when we come to the Oregon return, we claim a deduction up to $4,000 for tuition or other related expenses to get a state tax benefit of tuition. When the federal has repealed this, beginning in 2021, we don't have a state tax benefit for tuition. So that going away takes away, we had a menu of things we could choose from on the federal side, but the only Oregon opportunity we had was the deduction for tuition and expenses. Some of these other things, I just don't, alimony, I just mentioned that briefly, that for years, the person that paid alimony got a deduction. The person that received alimony had to pick it up as income. The inspector general looked at tax records and found there were many, many more people deducting alimony than were picking it up as income. So what they've done is they just said, no deduction, no income. And they gave us an extra year to get used to that rule. There were a lot of divorces in process when this rule first came out. So it was extended 1 year, but we are no longer able to deduct alimony payments, and the recipient no longer has to pick it up as income. Beyond that, this is actually recommendation F, it's just this one page. Some of these other items are rather obscure tax items, I would say. So we have reached the last page, page 82. Hopefully that wasn't too quick or too painful. I would invite you to, if you have any questions, Heather and I would be very willing to answer any questions you might have.
Great. I'll start off and invite the committee to put their hands up if they want questions as well. But getting back, I think this was Heather, getting back to the PPP loans and making the forgiven loan not count as income and yet not require or to allow expenses to be deducted against that income. Is there any place in the tax code that's analogous to this where you have a situation where something doesn't count as income, but you can still deduct expenses from it?
No, this is kind of a first time thing. So it's part of the CARES Act, and this is the first time it's kind of happened this way. The loan forgiveness is considered tax exempt income. So it plays out a bit differently on certain business returns, but the income is considered tax exempt and the deductions are considered just regular deductions that are allowed.
Okay, and if we had decided in Oregon to allow one but not the other, in terms of administration, what would make most sense to regard the payments, the forgiven loans as taxable, or to prohibit the use of the deductions against that income? What would make most sense for a taxpayer and for a CPA if we made that policy change?
I could say from just the taxable income piece, if you change the taxable income piece, you're talking about changing a ton of tax records because you have the CAT that you now have to think about, like that plays into this. So there's a lot more pieces that would change if you pick income as being taxable. In regards to deductions, then you're going to be disconnected and have potentially people file with the deductions and not knowing it because you have a timing issue. A lot of people are going to claim the deductions in 2020, but the forgiveness isn't happening until 2021. So kind of anything is going to be complicated. I can't say that I would pick one or another, being one or more easier than another.
That's a good point. On the medical deduction changing from 10% to 7.5% permanently, I guess this is a question for Chris, that what kind of impact would that have on our budget? Because I think we're tied in terms of the senior medical deduction, I think we're tied to that federal number. Is that right, Chris?
We are tied to that for itemized deductions. The senior medical deduction is for non-itemizers in Oregon. That's an Oregon subtraction for non-itemizers.
Okay, all right. I think I understand. Okay. But for itemizers, they would revert back to 7.5%. Yeah, so I suppose we'll be doing an analysis on what impact that will have.
Yeah, that's one of the pieces that we're working on an estimate for.
Okay, thank you. Let's see what else I had. Okay, I had another couple of notes, but other questions from the committee?
Madam Chair, Senator Boquist.
Senator Boquist, welcome to the committee. Have you, did you see most of this?
Yes, ma'am. I was, Chris can tell you when I was let in, which was just as the first slide was put on the slide.
Well, good. I'm glad you saw it. Do you have any questions of our presenters?
Yes, I do. I mean, it was made mention that they anticipated that there was another tax law coming down that might be addressing some of these issues with the PPP and other things. I was wondering if they had any speculation or had seen any draft legislation from the federal government in what they were discussing and doing to those in terms of the expense question you asked and the loan forgiveness and the income question. Thank you.
Okay.
I can jump in here if you want, Heather. So, I mean, Madam Chair and the committee, what started off is we had the CARES Act that said the forgiveness was not income. It would not be considered cancellation of debt income. And then we had the IRS jump in and they said, well, if that's then not taxable income, you can't deduct expenses. Normally, we are not allowed to deduct expenses that are related to tax-exempt income. I mean, my favorite example is life insurance premiums. You know, the life insurance benefits are not taxable. You can't deduct the premiums that generate that tax-free income. But there were a lot of members of Congress that said that when we said that this was not going to be cancellation of indebtedness income, we meant for it to be tax-free. And when you take away the deductions for the expenses that qualify for the tax-exempt or the forgiveness, then you are back to where you started at. I mean, it's whether you count the forgiveness as income or disallow the expenses, you're kind of at the same place. The issue that we're waiting on, a little bit more guidance on, is the timing that Heather's already alluded to. I've got clients that got PPP loans in 2020. They did not apply for forgiveness until 2021. You know, had we not had this rule that said the forgiveness, you can still deduct those expenses, they qualify for forgiveness, I would have been in a question as well, which year do we lose that deduction, you know? And I think that's something that if Oregon decides to go its own path, you've got to, there's some timing differences here that have got to be worked out.
Do you have any suggestions on how that might happen?
My personal opinion, it's not forgiven until you actually get a letter from the SBA saying we've forgiven your loan. And so if you don't have forgiven income in 2020, I have a difficult time saying you're limited on your expenses in 2020. Seems like the limitation on deductibility ought to match with the forgiveness of income. There should be a matching there. Now, I don't know you know, there may be some other permutations to this I'm not thinking of, but.
Well, and a lot of what we're waiting for from the IRS is also how did the timing and the treatment of this, but also like it now impacts the credits, that payroll credits and the PPP and the deductibility of expenses. So people who had deductible expenses and they used them against the PPP forgiveness, even if they've applied now, and what does that mean against these tax credits? So a lot of the things that are happening at IRS level are trying to clarify how to step one, step two, some of these treatments. But they aren't, I haven't heard anything that's changing the deductibility versus the non-taxable income. I haven't heard any changes of that. It's more in how to handle the PPP with other tax credits and loans.
Okay.
And if I might add, you know, there's a basis. I mean, with pass-through entities, you can only deduct losses to the extent that you have, well, I don't want to say basis or an investment in the entity. And so many of these pass-through entities, restaurants, whatever, have lost a lot of money. And so if they paid salaries all these years because they used the PPP money to pay salaries, without the forgiveness being income, they're limited in those losses anyway. And one of the things that we're struggling with right now is for those people who did not apply for forgiveness until 2021, we're the draft returns, what few we've gotten done so far, we're seeing people limited on being able to deduct those losses because they didn't get the income until 2021. And so there's a what I'm going to call basis limitation. And I think Chris understands what I'm talking about, but there are some, you know, when you get into pass-through entities, this gets messy.
Yeah, and of course, if they don't have income, they can't deduct against it anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but I want to answer your question, though.
This is the weeds committee.
Okay, weeds committee. Okay.
Senator Boquist, did you have any more follow-ups on your question?
I was just almost kind of a comment, and maybe they could comment back, because, I mean, the timing is everything here, because it would seem to me it's sort of like, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're in a cash or an accrual system. You borrowed money. You're not really accruing the income until somebody gave you a document saying that it's now income. And in the cash side, you're almost in the same problem because of your deductibilities that you just outlined right here. I mean, it seems like if you were going to do anything, you want to try and do it not retroactive, so to speak, but do it in one same year period. To be able to identify this, but then in order to cover the losses going backwards that you couldn't deduct, you'd have to be able to allow those too. I would really like them to come back with, considering what you're considering, Madam Chair, I can hear it in your voice and the questions, is it'd be really nice to have the CPAs come back and say, if you were going to do this, what would be the best way to do it? Thank you.
I agree. That would be a good thing. And I do understand the logistical difficulties of doing this, and also the fact that we're dealing with, in some cases, very struggling businesses. You mentioned the restaurant industry, and I think that's a good example. Okay.
Yes, ma'am, let me follow up and say, not just the businesses. Keep in mind, if we make this complicated and suddenly we have the large number of small businesses we have doing amended tax returns, Department of Revenue isn't handling this whole crisis very much better than anybody else is. So that's just going to compound it on them too.
Yeah. Okay, other questions from the committee? Well, this has been very educational. Thank you for providing your book. And we will get hardbound copies, I'm hearing.
We will do that.
We'll work it out with Chris.
We got the final edits, I think, about noon yesterday. So it wasn't, we were down to the wire.
Well, thank you for coming early in the session, because I think this background is something that we're going to need as we move forward on, especially on connect, reconnect issues. So I really appreciate it. I'll give one last chance for any questions. And if not, Chris, does that finish our agenda here?
That does conclude your agenda for today.
Okay, and thank you very, very much for providing this important education for our committee. And we are adjourned.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.